I am your host, Siobhan Lurice, and this is where we believe that inner work meets impact. And today we are going to be talking a little bit about the edges of consciousness and the evolution of our species on this planet, basically. My background has been very much so entrenched in the last 6 or 7 years in psychedelic exploration and bringing psychedelic healing into the mental health sphere with the trainings that I have received. And today we'll be talking about how plant medicines and psychedelics may hold the key to the global shift in consciousness. And today, my guest is Stephen Gray, who's a teacher and a writer on spiritual subjects and sacramental medicine. And he is the author of several books, Returning to Sacred World, a Spiritual Toolkit for the Emerging Reality, Cannabis and Spirituality, an Explorer's Guide to an Ancient Plant Spirit Ally, and How Psychedelics Can Help Save the World. Visionary and Indigenous Voices Speak Out. And so today I'm looking forward to having a very riveting conversation. So Steve, why don't you unmute yourself and maybe share a little bit about yourself with the audience, and then we'll dive in.
Sure. I don't know. What do you want to know?
How I got into these days,
wasting as much time as possible. I have a new book coming, but it hasn't really. That'll be next year with same publisher, Inner Traditions, Park Street Press. That one is a collection of stories from the path. The path. I almost said the past, but it's that too. And just like all the best stories that I've recollected from my own experience and from those of friends and colleagues, and a few from major figures in the world of psychedelics. They're all really short chapters, one or two or three pages. And then I threw in a few little chapters of mini chapters of insights. But that's one thing coming along. I'm actually spending a lot of time. I'm not a professional musician, although I did teach music as a career for about 20 years. But I compose music using Virtual Studio, Logic Pro, you know, on your computer, and all nice. The different sounds that I have access to and so on. And I've done things like created slideshows using my music as the background for that. My latest focus or attempt with that I've been working on this summer is I looked up on Spotify, I looked up playlists or psychedelic journeying or psychedelic assisted therapy music playlists. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, there's some really neat music on these. I'd like to make music that could be used for those purposes. So I've been focusing on that a bit.
That's lovely. Yeah. I have an upcoming appointment with a guy who apparently is a DJ and loves to put together playlists for people based on them specifically. And me and another therapist are going out to meet with him to see if he could also do that specifically for psychedelics. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. So that's very intriguing. I love it.
Yeah, there's at least a half a dozen playlists on Spotify with titles like that. And then we're just people have collected music they thought was appropriate.
Yes. So
it's not all amazing, but you know, there's some really interesting pieces on there.
Absolutely.
So that, and then I'm not doing this yet, but my next project, along with continuing to do some of this music, I want to get I have a newsletter with MailChimp, but I want to migrate that as much as possible over to Substack and get rid of the MailChimp one. And I want to start putting out content there, you know, short essays and stuff. And I might use, as I say, do some video recording with my own music as the background for that, for example.
Definitely, but as you probably keep me on your email list, then I'd love to know about that.
Oh, okay, sure. but probably, you know, that question that you asked often is like implies, if doesn't state directly necessarily, what got you into all this? So I had thought about, assuming you want to know, I thought about this a couple of minutes before we got on together today. And the one thing I want to say is that, with a sort of a woo-woo alert disclaimer for some people probably, but I don't think we can talk about what formed us and what pointed us in the directions we go in our life, especially for people who are active about change and growth, without considering or without acknowledging that we carry a stream of history that goes way back before the birth of this particular incarnation. I could spend the hour telling you about some of the information that's come my way that leads me to think that I have a history just like probably everybody else. I'm fairly sure I knew the Buddhist teacher that I studied with in this life in past lives. I was probably a student of his in past lives. I'm pretty sure I've been around spiritual and religious environments. I've been told that by some pretty powerful psychics a couple of times as well, in the past. Not necessarily always successfully, but basically, so one answer as to how I got into this current work that I do is it's a continuation of a long history, I would say. So in this particular incarnation, I've just always been, well, for one thing, when I was growing up, I didn't have a good handle on myself. I was quite shy in a lot of ways. It's kind of a classic that people that get involved in healing work of one kind or another are typically because they need healing. They recognize that they need healing, right? So I by the time I hit early adulthood, I was pretty sure I needed to go to the repair shop, and by the way, cannabis had an influence in that. I've been an educator on cannabis and a ceremonialist for a long time as well. But
how did it kind of influence, along with psychedelics, or shape the your life and the work?
Well, for starters, and this was, how would you put it, accidental or unconscious in a sense. It wasn't part of any kind of a plan. What cannabis does, this is essential to how it can work as a spiritual ally, is in the same way that it can go wrong, so to speak, is that it amplifies things. It amplifies biochemically, pharmacokinetically, it amplifies mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically, all those things, opens up channels, et cetera, et cetera. But it amplifies. And if you're thinking, this is the sort of the harmful or negative side of it, so to speak. If your thinking is negative or harmful to yourself or others, but particularly if it's, in my case and many others, if it's, you might say, self-sabotaging, then cannabis can amplify that out of all perspective. And that's what I meant by it kind of thrust me onto the path in some ways, because until I started using cannabis in my late teens, I don't think I realized that. I was already interested in reading about spiritual and psychological, psychology kind of things, starting around the end of high school. But once I got using cannabis more, it triggered. There were times where it triggered some pain, So that's what I meant by it driving me onto the path in that sense. But also, the first time I ever tried cannabis, I recognized that there was a dimension of experience, even perceptual experience, that was obscured or hidden or unavailable to me, that cannabis brought out, right? It brought out, just in that amplifying way, it brought out, increased sensual sense perceptions in a variety of ways and different ways of thinking about or seeing and experiencing things as well. So that's what kind of got me going. But also, I happened to come of age at a very ripe time in the culture in Western society, which this is not one of those my generation, above all uberales or something ideas. It's just that there was a particular configuration of forces and circumstances which will probably never be repeated, for partly because, for one thing, a whole bunch of people came back from World War II and started coupling like rabbits, right? And so that produced what is, in my mind, somewhat pejoratively referred to as the baby boomer generation. That was a major, a huge uplift or, you know, uptick in the number of people being born in the 10 years or so after World War II. Combine that with the fact that the generation of the people who were producing those kids had lived through, many of them, two world wars and at least one world war and a lengthy, serious economic depression. So they had a particular mindset that was influenced by that. And one of those things was it was a kind of like very material time for a lot of people, like a very conservative, very conformist, button down. Let's get things solid here. Let's get a home. Let's get, you know, we're talking, you know, mostly middle class Westerners that did this, because the hippies, so to speak, the counterculture were primarily middle class. So they came out of that generation of parents who had worked hard to create this safe sort of base for themselves and their children and so on. But largely for a whole bunch of reasons that many we probably don't even know, but largely because of that, this generation that came of age at the same time started to recognize the great limitations of that mindset that had determined the way that those people lived in the 1950s and into the early 60s, and then the cannabis and other psychedelics went. People start going, oh, wait a minute, that's really barren. That's really empty in a lot of ways. That's really restrictive. This is not good, this sort of ultra safe, conservative, conformist, materialist approach to life, you know? And that, for probably no accidental reasons, dovetailed or you know, synchronized chronologically with an explosion of interest in spirituality, especially that of Asia, but not solely. If you look at the top 40 charts of around 1970, you see blatantly spiritual themed songs, like, you know, number one hits or whatever. You know, put your hand in the hand of the man from Galilee, you know. Musical plays like Hair or Godspell, you know, all that kind of, it was all over the place. And so that I was right in the middle of all that, influenced me deeply. I had a number of experiences with LSD, some of them quite enlightening. And then there was this idea, well, we may never get to the present at the rate I'm going here, but I'll try to keep it relatively short. This is not saying it to talk about myself, but to put a little context on where all this, you know, on the cultural level came from and went or has gone. So there was an, I don't know if you call it a meme or a kind of an idea floating around with my cohorts, as it were, at the time, which was something like, okay, so you've had some divinatory breakthrough or experience on LSD. That was the main psychedelic of the time. But now what are you going to do? You can't take LSD every weekend for the rest of your life. You have to find a way to make this real in an ongoing way. Today we call that integration. We didn't have that term back then. So for a lot of people, including myself, it was find a spiritual tradition or practice of some kind. For me, it was Tibetan Buddhism, and I was very involved with that for 25 years or so. Eventually started to fall away as I started to see some serious cracks in some of the ways that things were being done in that organization and so on and so on. And that dovetailed with my discovery of Terence McKenna, who I credit with turning me back onto the path of psychedelics as spiritual allies, because that's what he was talking about in the late 80s and early 90s. Was he was saying, hey, folks, there are ancient traditions here of people who have used these substances not recreationally, not for Friday night partying, not for sensation or colorful pictures, but for healing, for spiritual awakening. And they're quite powerful, and they produce amazing possibilities. And so I got re-interested in all that around that time. And I'll give you the very short version. One thing led to another. I started working with psychedelics again. One thing that led me to was a Native American church with the peyote prayer ceremonies. And I had about 10 years of very active participation with them. That was amazing. I would like to say for people that excuse me, that I've been around a lot of ritual containers with and not with medicines in particular, like the Tibetan Buddhists. I mean, I grew up in the Christian church too. I've been around all kinds of ritual containers, you might say. And in my experience, the container created in those Native American church all night peyote prayer ceremonies is unparalleled. It's essentially impeccable. You know, the road man who ran a lot of those meetings, who I call Canukas, part of his name, that's not his full name, once said in response to somebody who thought there was a bit of a dark energy had come to visit her during the night, he said, "Well, you know, we don't have that here because we keep the space protected. We keep it clean." So, you know, in all those, you know, 150 years of peyote prayer ceremonies throughout the Western United States in particular, they're generally, if there's a spirit coming in, it's Grandfather Peyote, Holy Spirit, right? Mm. The healing spirit. So anyway, that was wonderful. And I've also spent a bunch of time sitting with the Santo Daime people who use ayahuasca. So had that experience as well. And one more thing I'll say about my own personal background. I just retired from 13 years of being the lead organizer essentially for an iconic conference here in Vancouver called a Spirit Plant Medicine Conference, for which we've brought in many influencers and leaders in psychedelics.
Here we go.
And here we are.
Bringing it to modern time. And so we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
And when we come back, I would love to start with, based on your personal experience,
yes,
of divine connection, how does that translate into collective healing or global consciousness? So that's where we'll begin when we come back. Come
sure,
back.
Big question. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
To the expansion room, where today we are talking about the role of plant medicine in humanity's return to the sacred. And my guest today is Stephen Gray. And we broke right at the point of thinking about how his personal experience of oneness or divine connection translates into collective healing for our planet or global consciousness as it's rising now. And so I'll leave the floor to you, Steve. How would you think about that as a larger collective issue? Oh, and you'll have to unmute. Sorry.
Okay, it's a really big question, and I really would feel, for me, it would be inappropriate to try to nail that one down with some kind of authoritative carved in stone answer. There are lots of different opinions about how likely the use of psychedelics is to be able to have any kind of significant influence on the trajectory of planetary affairs. Some people are quite skeptical. Some very astute, you know, deeply considered, philosophically oriented writers and thinkers think that there's not much hope for psychedelics. It's just that our problems are too overwhelming for too many people. There's 8 billion people on this planet. And how many of those people are using psychedelics, and how many of those people are using them with, you know, right intention, you might say. And how many of those people are able to translate, as you're implying in your question, their personal awakening or insights or catharsis into collective action. So it's a really big question. Let's go back to the basics about what they actually do, though, or can do. So, you know, in the right circumstances, and occasionally, you know, accidentally, you know, where you just, somebody wasn't thinking about why they were taking some psilocybin mushrooms and they ended up having an amazing insight or an experience, fine. But you're of course, as you would know, Siobhan, you are lifting up your percentage chances dramatically by taking these substances, first of all, with the intention of healing and awakening, and secondly, in the right circumstances, the right conditions, preferably with a sitter, a guide, or in a ceremony guided by somebody who really knows what they're doing. And we could actually spend an hour talking about what knows what they're doing means as well, but we won't. I'll just say in sort of 27 and a half words or less that in my view and that of many other people, anyone who has the balls to the cojones to set themselves up as a ceremonial leader like an ayahuasquero needs to do a rigorous and oftentimes long period of training, keep under a mentor, and remain humble and be really clear about why you're doing this, because it's too easy to be in it for sex, power, money, you know, influence, etc. Especially with, you know, we know there's so much ayahuasquero or you know, ayahuasca ceremonies around. I mean, I don't know what people are charging $300-$400 for a 5-hour ceremony, and you get 15-20 people in that room. Just do the math, right? You know, there's a chance of making good money there. And then if you think of yourself as some sort of a guru or wise person, and you know, you could be seduced into seducing, as it were. So that said, spiritually, biochemically, whatever, you know, that combination is, that sort of potent brew is, psychedelics open up channels that are existing already. You know, the Buddha said, we're already Buddhas. We are Buddha. The word Buddha just means awake, or one who is awake. And, you know, basically the core Buddhist teaching is we're all that already. It's just that we've covered it over with layers and layers of thought and concept and belief and confusion. But underneath all that is the pure light of our true nature. So, because we're physical meat bodies, chemical beings, we do a lot of that by the chemicals that move through our brains in particular, right? What psychedelics do is they muck with the mix, and they open up some of those channels that have been shut down or lain dormant. And so you can go astray with that, of course, but you know, in the best circumstances, they open one up potentially to reality. You know, first of all, the way I often think of psychedelics is having two sort of overlapping or interwoven functions. One is that they can open up the channels to see your own personal history clearly. So oftentimes people will recognize traumas from their past that need to be addressed. That's the more on the personal psychology kind of level. And the other side of that is they can open you up to what's beyond that. That's what I would call the unconditioned reality. That's sort of a Buddhist term as well. They can show you that love steers the stars, I think they said in that Hair musical that I refer to, you know. I think the song was called The Dawning of the Age of Aquarius, you know. Yeah. That love will steer the stars. And I think love does steer the stars. You know, whatever you think of as God or the Holy Spirit or the Creator, we don't really know what that is. And it's not really possible to know that, I don't think, you know, while you're in human form exactly. But you can ultimately, you can recognize the fruits of the Lord's labor, you might say. In other words, I'm not resting in a state of enlightenment or anything like it, but I've been there, I would say. You know, I've had experiences such as the Native American Church peyote prayer ceremonies where time stopped, everything went completely still, and the space just felt, you know, one of my favorite phrases of all time. I don't even know if anything Jesus said got accurately translated through all the many centuries and languages and, you know, gatekeepers, but he supposedly said, referred to the peace that passes all understanding. Mm-hmm. Well, whoever said that, you couldn't make that up. You can't just say, oh yeah, there's this thing called the peace that passes all understanding, right?
Right.
It's real. You know, it's our ultimate possibility. It's our ultimate potential. Our ultimate destiny is to be able to rest in the nature. My Buddhist teacher called it rest in the nature of alaya, like the true state, right? Mm-hmm. Rest there. So I've had several, always with psychedelics, actually. I've had several experiences that were brief. But when you're there, you go, oh yeah, there's no discussing this. This quote passes all understanding. You know, you can't explain it. You can't justify it. You can just go, yes. You know, the Buddha, another one, you have no idea what he actually said, but there's a story about the Buddha himself, was that when he, after he realized, achieved enlightenment, I would say landed on enlightenment, somebody said, how do you know you're enlightened? And a story, or apocryphal as it may be, was that he then reached out and put his palm down on the earth beside him and said, this earth is my solid witness. In other words, it's just what's real, okay? So the psychedelics ultimately can open those kinds of channels. And, you know, the Buddhist term for enlightenment or awakened mind is bodhicitta. And bodhi means awake, and citta means one who is traveling. Citta means mind. So basically what bodhicitta means, pardon me, that's bodhisattva. I'm getting mixed up here. Bodhi means awake. Citta is mind, but mind is defined in Sanskrit that way, is what we would call mind and heart mixed together. The mind, there's no such thing as a mind separate from the heart in that way, right? So bodhicitta is our ultimate nature. And I mention this because it requires, or it inevitably involves the heart, you know? So my Buddhist teacher's term was awakened heart. That's enlightenment, awakened heart, right? So love does, as far as I can tell, although I'm not, swimming in the deep waters all the time by any stretch, as far as I can tell, love does indeed steer the stars. But it's an intelligent love. It's intelligence. You know, Terence McKenna talked about this a lot too. You know, it's very common that people who have had these kind of experiences talk about how the ultimate source, if you will, of life altogether, the eternal beyond time and space source, is something, you know, words are so frail in comparison to actual truth, you know, but, you know, something like intelligent love, creative love. I like to think of the creators, and I think there are many, as artists, and players. They play, and it's kind of like, you know, I can imagine them sort of sitting around in their quote unquote room going, oh boy, what can we try now? You know, oh, here's one, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so that would be an interesting way of thinking about how psychedelics and cannabis open us up to understanding that possibility. And maybe going back to the question,
right?
Is there a tipping point? And I do keep hearing from some people in metaphysical and psychedelic spaces that there's a tipping point, that the percentage, whatever the percentage is of people on the planet who step into these realms and learn to integrate and come back and inhabit or express from that place within themselves, that's what will shift the planet. So I don't know what that percentage supposedly is.
No.
But that's the whole idea, I think, is that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, and we'll talk more about this later today, plant medicine, because there's holotropic breath work, there are other practices. I'm in the yoga tradition, you in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. There are other practices that can help people get
of course
as well.
Yes, right,
so we'll take our next break, and then when we come back, time is flying, right?
Well, I hadn't even gotten to fully answering your question. What I was giving you was the background of what the psychedelics can ideally do. So let's take it from there.
Then we'll get the other half on the after this break. So come on back, y'all.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and a space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Expansion Room. Steve, would you share with us a little bit more of your answer to that question? Oh, and you'll have to unmute yourself. Just taking a brief moment, and then we'll move into the rest of this segment.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a bit of a problem. This is a huge topic that we're talking about. We could easily do a couple of hours like this easily. So I'll try to narrow it down to what I hope might be some of the essential points here. So in the previous little segment, I tried to point out or try to, you know, explain what psychedelics can ultimately do. They can lead us to our true nature, ultimately, you know. However, the next step, or the translation, as you think, I think you put it, from there into collective action, into action in the world, that's a whole other issue. And it's complicated because, for one thing, as I say, there are 8 billion of us and there aren't that many people using psychedelics. It's a relatively small number. So, you know, where that tipping point is, who knows? Secondly, How many of the people that are embracing psychedelics are making that step? And that's a question. You know, and in fact, there's a study that indicates that depending on certain, you know, variables, factors, psychedelics can actually make you more of what you already were in your way of being in the world. So if you are already an arrogant person, the insights that you gain, you know, that seem to be quite powerful spiritual insights could potentially make you more arrogant, not less, right? So humility is absolutely essential in all this work, absolutely essential. And continuing self-examination, integration, etc. But also the recognition that it's just the starting point, you know. I mean, I've been around this kind of stuff long enough. I was involved with the sort of encounter groups and healing groups of the 70s and so on. And, you know, people would get obsessed endlessly with their, quote, case history, you know, because there's always something, you know, that you can unravel in yourself. You know, my old Buddhist teacher once said, you'll never know all of it. You know, you've got past lives. You've got a giant, you know, library full of traumas from your past lives and so on. You'll never unravel all that stuff. So all you can do is just, you know, be as present as possible. The famous psychologist William James said that, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living. I mean, it's a bit of a harsh statement, but it's in some key sense, it's true, because otherwise you're just spinning your wheels. And from the Buddhist point of view, you're just going to come back the next time exactly where you left off this time, facing the same problems that you need to deal with. So if you don't deal with them now, you're just putting off the inevitable. And you may not have even the conditions next time around to be able to, that you do now, you know, if you have the money to go to all these healing retreats and therapists and all this kind of stuff, you know. So, you know, that's another aspect of that. You know, when I say a limited number of people are using psychedelics, a lot of those people are the privileged. You know, they're the people who can afford to do it in a relatively small portion of the planet. So that's one thing. However, that said, and I don't need to go on about this. Ideally, of course, the clarity, the healing that one gains would, you would think, naturally spill out into compassionate action.
Yeah.
But I think people have to recognize that, you know, because there seems to be commentary that I'm reading that it's not happening as much as it should. I get Daniel Pinchbeck's newsletter, and he's a really, really astute observer of culture from both a spiritual and political perspective. And he says he has a lot of really intelligent, wonderful, you know, sort of acquaintances and friends that are just tuned out to the political world, essentially. You know, they think, oh, well, there's nothing I can do, or, you know, it's hopeless anyway, sort of idea. But those people should be, you know, strapped to a chair and forced to read Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist master, who said, you know, that a spiritual life without action in the world is meaningless, right? So that's what has to happen. And we don't know what the potential is. What the bottom line is, this is the most important thing of all of this is, you know, and it's difficult to condense this down to a short precis, if you will, but I'll try for a couple of minutes here. There is essentially one story on this planet right now, as far as I can tell, and that is that, and this is where it could get potentially really complicated. I'm trying to keep it simple. For a whole bunch of reasons, we have reached a nexus point as a species on this planet. It's been visualized by mystics and psychics and deep exploring psychedelic psychonauts. It's been, it's been imprinted all over the indigenous prophecies, which were also received in visions more often than not, all pointing at this particular time. You know, and naysayers, eye rollers will say, oh, yeah, every generation says this. No. This is, in fact, different. Because we have never reached the carrying capacity of the planet, for one thing. You know, 100 years ago, what did we have, like 2 million people on the planet or something like that? You know, we have reached essentially the carrying capacity of this planet. But there's just something inevitable about this moment. It was coming to this. It was going to come to this. It did come to this. And what this is that we can no longer live with ignorance of who we are, of our true nature. It's no longer sustainable. And so we're at an unprecedented moment in the history of human beings. Absolutely unprecedented. Yes, there have been, you know, moments of great crises and novelty in the past, but not to this extent. This is the sort of the ultimate final one, you might say, almost what Terence McKenna called the end of history, the end of a certain kind of history. He was talking about, you know, at a deeper level than that, but nonetheless. What the story, you know, we live based on stories. It's whatever story we hear that we believe is what determines the way we live, you know. And so what needs to happen now is the real story, the best story, needs to be told in ways that people can understand. Referring to Terence again, McKenna, he had I think he borrowed this and rephrased it for modern days. But it was, if the truth can be told so as to be understood, it will be believed. In other words, once you've seen, this is where the psychedelics translating into collective action of one kind or another goes, is once you've seen that love steers the stars, if you will, that there's an eternal reality behind this, that there's a loving, creative reality that we're all part of, that we're all Buddha to, then, you know, what do you do then? You know, you have to get out there and participate. And by the way, there's no rule about how you do that. Nobody should try to get too dogmatic about saying, oh, well, you must march or you must do this or you must do that. It's different for everybody depending on their talents and predilections and so on. You know, for some people who are, you know, whose lives and minds are relatively simple, it might just simply be every time you step out your door, you're in a state of love and peace. And, you know, people pick that up when you go into the store to buy some bread. It's like you could smile at that person and it looks like a real smile and their day just brightens up a little, right? Or other people might be writers, educators, musicians, activists, you name it, right? So but that's the story that has to get out, is that people are believing harmful stories, right? Mm-hmm. They're believing stories of fear. Fear is the great liar. Fear is planet Earth's great effing liar, right?
Yeah.
Fear always tells you what the worst part of you is susceptible to hearing.
Absolutely.
You know, don't trust life, don't trust love, don't trust the movement of energies, don't trust other, et cetera, et cetera. Find sources to blame for your own inability to, you know, land on Buddha nature, et cetera, et cetera. But there's another story, and it's the only story in a sense, right? It's the real story. It's the story that we are these awakened beings by nature, and we need to find that. Quite honestly, again, this is not just something I made up or an opinion that I've come up with on my own from a lot of the sources of wisdom that I draw upon. I would say I believe that things are going to get worse before they get better. But that's all the more reason why we do need the real story, the believable story that makes sense, that there is a true nature, that humans are capable of arriving at it, achieving it, and manifesting it individually and collectively. So we need, I think, ideally, we need to be thinking ahead, you know, that we may see. I mean, because this system has reached its comeuppance point, right? It's unraveling because it's unsustainable, because it's based on spiritual misunderstanding. It had to unravel at some point. And this seems to be the point, sometime in happening already now and developing over the next several decades. So material life might look a lot more rugged and that in the near future, and that might cause a lot more fear and confusion. But the more people can hear the story from people who have some sense that it's real and they're not just theorizing, the more likely it is that we'll be able to make that transition, that kind of tipping point that you were talking about, can result in us arriving at one of the contributors to my book called A Mature Planetary Civilization.
Yeah,
Well, you're probably at time for your
we are
next
at
break.
time for a break. Perfect timing for a break. And so
Yeah.
when we come back in our last segment, we'll talk about how to bring like the two worlds together, in the sense that those who are exploring with psychedelics and those who are not, but who are still on the path, how do we then collectively bring that waking up or that tipping point into being? So come on back.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Expansion Room. And today we're talking about the ways in which plant medicines could possibly bring humanity back to its sacred self. And the question that pops up for me right now, Steve, is that that question around, for those who are not in psychedelic spaces, but they are in sacred spaces, right? They are people who are people of prayer, who are doing conscious service, who engage in going inward through meditation and all the other sacred practices, which I also include mental health in that, because doing the work, the shadow work, doing the mental wellness deep dives, as some people like to call it, can also help you to get to the other side. For some people, it might take longer, but those are the ways people can tap into sacred space within themselves to then hopefully integrate that experience out into the world. And so how can the two parts come together, psychedelic spaces as well as non-psychedelic spaces, to bring about the collective waking up? Right.
Well, I'm probably no more of an authority on that than a few million other people around, including some of the people watching and listening to this right now. So I'll just kind of, you know, free range ramble here for a minute. First of all, we have been talking about that, you know, in this conversation, just like, you know, the walking the bridge across from your own healing work to collective action. Yeah, again, I don't know, you know, how that happens with any particular individual, but you know, obviously when successful healing work, however it's done, is bringing us closer to what you just called our sacred nature, our true nature. And what that true nature is, as far as I can tell, is one of inner peace and love and compassion. It's really straightforward. It's really simple. You know, it's sort of like woo-woo dependent almost. but it's true, you know. And that in itself should be enough guidance, I would think, or enough impetus to participate. I mean, we have to see ourselves, even, you know, even if we're kind of like for a temporarily faking it to make it as connected. I mean, this is the other sort of great open secret, in a sense, is that, you know, that the masters have been telling us for a long time is we are one, so to speak, you know. You know, we are intimately interwoven into everything. Everything is interdependent on this planet. I noticed in one of your questions, which we may, you know, that you would put in on paper, but we may not get to, is, you know, where indigenous wisdom comes into this. Well, not to overgeneralize or romanticize indigenous wisdom, because indigenous communities all over the world have been just about everything from, you know, embodying great wisdom to, you know, violent cultures, et cetera, et cetera. However, there does seem to be a somewhat common thread amongst many indigenous people, certainly, you know, Native Americans and Native Canadians that I'm aware of. And I have met a lot of these people and studied and read a lot of this stuff as well, that is earth connected in a way that the modern Western culture is not particularly. That's also a huge topic because, you know, it involves our history and the kind of conditioning that's been laid upon us to see ourselves as a separate and above from dead nature, right? You know, this was Rousseau, or I forget who it was, one of these French philosophers that, you know, posited that, you know, nature is dead. There's nothing alive. This is the great sort of uncovering that has to happen, or one of the great uncoverings is to recognize that there's absolutely immense intelligence in everything, even rocks. You know, Native American medicine people have communicated with rocks, believe it or not. You know, mm-hmm. Certainly plant human communication is extensive, animal human connection communication is extensive. This is one thing the psychedelics can do, is they can open up these channels, but it's not in terms of the kind of question you were leading this into, is that it doesn't have to be the psychedelics. They just happen to be, because of their biochemical function at the very least, the most powerful and dramatic, you know, openers of the door, as it were, you know, gateways to opening. You know, and everyone's coming from a different place too. You know, like when I talk about, you know, all these past lives that we've had lots of people come into this life ready to hit the road running, as it were, you know, so they don't necessarily have to do psychedelics to be able to, you know, to be of service. I come back to this notion that self-examination, not narcissistic, you know, self-analyzing self-examination, but honest observation of oneself is essential. And if you know that you're already fairly peaceful, that you're happy, you know, more or less, and that you're connected to your heart, then, you know, maybe that's all you need to know. And then find out what your way of being in the world is. One of my favorite terms is following the golden thread. Following the golden thread essentially means the golden thread is the natural way of that energy moves. You would even say the love energy moves in the world, but creative energy, or just energy, period, moves. And we have the potential of aligning ourselves with that. And so it transcends our ego agenda, if you will. It involves intuition. That's also a huge topic. That's one of the other sort of top five great open secret things, is intuition as an innate capability has largely been buried in Western culture. Yes. And it's key. Its development is key to our future. Following your own inborn, not opinions, but actual intelligence, sort of unconditional intelligence, is how to proceed, as far as I can tell. So we ultimately know we have the antennae to know, you know, does this feel, you know, is this the golden thread? Am I feeling this way? You know, am I feeling my way in here? I'll just briefly say that there was a book about 20 years or so ago called The Celestine Prophecy. It wasn't highly regarded by people who thought highly of good writing, but it had some interesting ideas. And one of them was, this guy is a sort of a metaphorical journey, but he had to like find 10 clues that would lead him to where he was going, which you could say metaphorically was enlightenment. The very last one was, you're going to come to, he's up in the mountains now. There's nobody around. It's just nature. He says, you're walking along this kind of like dirt road or whatever, and you're going to come to a fork in the road. And one of these ways is going to take you to your destination, and one of them is not. And the only way you're going to know is one side is going to light up a little bit more. It's going to be very subtle. It's like it'd be a little brighter. These are the subtle clues that we have essentially allowed to go dormant in this culture, most of us. But that might be the best I could say in a short little summation to your question, is how we, you know, no matter whether it's psychedelics or whatever it is, how people act is just trust your own intelligence, trust yourself, pay attention, stay humble, stay open-hearted as much as possible, and find out what your way is, and trust that you can be guided into doing the work that you are capable of and need to do and want to do.
Beautifully said. And that woven into that, I hear integration, embodiment,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and self-expression out in the world. You'll know what to do.
Yeah. And by the way, we haven't even talked about cannabis, and it looks like we're not going to be able to today. But several of the contributors to my cannabis book have said the same thing. They see cannabis as a potential sacrament of peace for the planet.
Yeah.
Because when it's used wisely and effectively, and that's a big question in itself, it can calm us down, settle us down into the moment, and deepen our connection to the moment, and help us be present in those ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation today. I think it's an important one, and I hopefully will get a chance to have you back, and we can expand on that in sometime in the future. And so for my audience, if there was something that you heard that really resonated for you, I encourage you to take some time and go inward and allow for that reflection on that. Mm-hmm. And to, if you want to read one of Stephen Gray's books, they were also listed in the show notes. I think it's important to really allow for the questions to bubble up around what can plant medicines do for us, not only as individuals, but for the collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely an ongoing conversation. Also, if you are interested in having these kind of conversations in real time, we have a community online through the Circle platform called The Expansion Room. And mm-hmm. so you can check us out there and join and allow for some more of this expanded conversation around these conversations. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and I hope to see you all here next week on Wednesday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc. Have a good week.
You happy with that?
Listening to Talk Radio NYC.